Hi, you're listening to Better Half Chats, a dialogue between a seminary graduate, Andrew, and his candid wife, that's me, Bethany. Today we're going to talk about Revelation 21, 1 through 4. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne, saying, Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away.
All right, so we've come to the book of Revelation, which is a source of lots of confusion and lots of weird things. People think and say, but we've chosen a passage from Revelation that's pretty, I don't know, fairly without controversy, I guess, since it's towards the end of the book, kind of regardless of whatever view you hold of Revelation, this passage is probably true for all views, but we'll kind of get into that some, and because I think the different views of Revelation can make this passage mean something different, depending on what you believe. But I think this is also pretty, across the board, not controversial. But I don't know. What do you think?
I have been dreading this one, just to be honest. Yeah. I have no desire to dive into Revelation. Just confession. I just never really wanted to read about it, or I think it was because I maybe had like a super interest when I was like at a really impressionable age, mm-hmm. and read a bunch of scary stuff, and just decided, you know, I don't really care to read about that anymore ever again.
Yeah.
And so in my adult life, I've just been like, I'm sure I know there's truth in Revelation, but I've just decided, like, there's nothing I can do about it, so I'm just going to avoid learning about it.
Yeah.
It's just been, like, a scary place for me, and I've just been at peace with never studying it, which is interesting because I'm starting the BSF this next season that's all about Revelation.
Yeah, well.
And everyone's all excited about it, and I'm just kind of, like, I'm just doing it because I want to start BSF, not because I have any interest in Revelation at all. But I think it's just God's timing that
right.
He's put me in it for this, and I'm going to learn a lot, but eh.
Well, I see what you mean. I mean, Revelation is like there's certain elements of pop culture that maybe we won't mention, but I'm sure you know what we're talking about, has sort of made Revelation out to be a certain thing, and kind of made some people believe that this is the only, that that's the only way to look at it, which
right.
It really isn't.
So when I was looking at this time for this talk, when I was studying, I tried really hard to extract all images of an afterlife, of the end times, of hell, of heaven. I tried to really extract all those images from my thoughts and just read the words and just listen to God. And just try to see what it says, and not with all these images that we have from art and culture and literature and movies, and just read it.
Mm-hmm.
What I really tried to do.
Yeah, that's great. Well, what's kind of the first thing that pops out to you getting to the actual passage?
Well, I started in verse 1, 21:1, and the word new was the first thing that stuck out to me, and I was, my first thought of the word new was, like when you have a pair of shoes that are worn out and you have to buy new shoes, you buy, like, I go and buy usually very similar shoes, but just the new version. So they're not worn out anymore. They have better soles and they're more supportive, but they're like, they're the same shoe.
Yeah.
And, or if, you know, you get a new car, like it runs just like your old car, but it's just new. And when I was researching this word, a phrase came up in one of the books I was reading, and it said new could mean I've never seen this before, this is new to me. Like, new as in this is a brand new thing. Like, I mean, it kind of sounds the same when you say it like that, but
yeah,
it's not a new version of a worn out old thing. It's a completely new thing that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
Whereas,
yeah,
like, when my shoes wear out and I go buy new shoes, the shoes are very familiar to me. They're just nicer than my old shoes.
Yeah.
But this kind of made me think it could be that the new heaven and the new earth are things that are not just better versions of the current heaven and the current earth, that they are completely different.
Yeah.
Something that we haven't never seen before.
Yeah.
But I also was trying to think about the writer and the framework in which he's writing this is, I guess, I don't fully understand it. I haven't studied this a lot, so I'm trying to figure it out. But he's been given, like, a vision of what it's going to be like, and he's been told to write this down.
Yeah, John, there's some kind of debate about what exactly he's experiencing here. So John has been exiled onto the island of Patmos, and basically that was his punishment for, trying to be a Christian. And so instead of killing him, they send him into exile. And so he's on this little tiny island, and he experiences Jesus. Now, some people believe that this was simply a vision or a dream. I've heard others who believe that this is actual, like, physically Jesus came and visited him and spoke to him. There's kind of a wide range of views of what exactly is happening here. All it says is that John was in the Spirit. So we don't really know what that means. Yeah, it could mean that he was having a dream. It could mean that he was just filled with the Spirit, in which case he could be completely awake and lucid or whatever. So there's a kind of a debate.
Right. But what we have to believe is that this is inspired vision.
Yeah, and in some sense, he really was hearing the words of Jesus, whether Jesus was physically there or whether Jesus was simply giving him a vision. He was hearing the words of Jesus.
Okay. So when I think about if I were to see, I always put myself in the place of the writer because it helps me get it. But if
that's
I was
what you should do.
To have a vision, the only thing I could, the only way I could describe the vision is to use things that I know in real life. To kind of parallel it to.
Yeah.
And so he's has his world that he knows of, and he's describing this vision, which could be nothing like anything he knows how to describe, but he's just using these words the best he can.
Yeah.
So that's another thing I kind of think about when I'm reading this is there's a lot of words about this. Like, it's a whole book about this. So he's definitely trying to be very clear, but he also has to use things he has experienced in real life to describe.
Absolutely. So yeah, I see what you're saying about, like, this is something completely new, and I think that that's true, but I also think it's significant that not only is it a new heaven and a new earth, but this new heaven and new earth, or this new city, the new holy city, New Jerusalem, is actually coming down out of heaven toward the earth. So, like, to me, that shows us, like, well, if it's coming down to the earth, then there must be something familiar about what's happening. If it's coming to be here.
Right.
So that, to me, seems like
he was able to grasp,
yeah,
you know, where up and down were, like,
yeah,
that where he was earth, like,
sure,
it was enough. Okay.
And of course, it might be, it might be, like you said, I mean, he might just be using things that he's familiar with to describe something that is completely different. But, you know, to me, I just feel like it makes sense that there's something of familiarity,
yeah,
about the new
kingdom.
The other thing that I looked into deeper in the first verse is the word for what mine says passed away. Yours says passed away too. The Greek word there, which I have no clue what it is.
Oh, it's the form of the word aperkomai, but.
But when I read passed away, it mean, in my mind, I think dead, gone forever, you know, bye-bye, gone. But the word really means, like, to leave. And it can also mean to arrive. Because if you think about it, if you're leaving somewhere, you're going somewhere else. So you're going to arrive somewhere else. So that word was more of, like, a relocation mm-hmm. of place rather than, like, a obliteration. Mm-hmm. But then,
yeah, so it means to, like, to return to, or like if someone is visiting you, then they left or they went away, you would use this word.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's
and
it's
like
a question
later
of,
they use the word, a different word for when the tears, he will wipe every tear from their eyes. Like they don't use the same word of going, like the tears are not going away in the same way. Like that word for wipe away really did mean like obliterate.
Yeah. And then like also when it has this repeated, there will be no more, these mm-hmm. things will be no more. That's a pretty strong phrase that kind of just means like those things won't exist
yeah,
anymore.
Like those are gone. Those are removed from existence, but it's a different word they used for the old heaven and the old earth. Like they are like leaving. That was interesting to me. I don't know what that means, but it definitely opened my mind to other possibilities, like, you know, what maybe could be hell or, I don't know.
Right.
Or
kind of pulls your doctrine of hell into it. Like, what
yeah,
is,
I don't know.
What is hell? Does this mean that those things are completely obliterated, or does it just mean they move to a different place, or
they're not
that kind
new,
of question?
And they're not. I mean, the biggest part about this passage, I feel like, is the dwelling of God in earth.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the biggest thing to me that I'm pulling out of this is, so the holy city, and I'm talking a lot, so you can cut in whenever you want.
Well, I was going to say, what's definitely clear is that God's presence is now among man in a new way. So that's definitely clear. And it's also, and so what's definitely clear is that in the presence of God, all of these things, death, tears, pain, mourning, crying, all of those things do not exist in the presence of God. So regardless of what may be happening outside of the presence of God or where the presence of God is not, I guess, I don't know, that doesn't seem right to me either, though, because, you know, hell is such a hard question to answer. If mm-hmm. God is sort of the one that rules over everything, then he must rule over hell, too, you know? So, like...
But his presence is not with
but hell. In what sense is God's presence not in hell if he still kind of rules over and is sovereign over it, you know what I mean? That's a tough question.
Well, I think the difference here between, like, ruling and dwelling, there's a big difference. Like we're looking at the holy city, you know, adorned like a bride coming down, and then God's announcing like I'm gonna dwell with my people. And
yeah.
The one of the words, well, if you think about, they say the behold the tabernacle of God is among men. And if you think about Old Testament tabernacle, I'm like all that it took to get to God's presence in the tabernacle
mm-hmm.
and like what, I hate to use the word hassle, but what a hassle, but like all the steps it took to be clean enough to even be in that presence. And now that presence is just going to be,
it's just immediately
it's just there.
Like, available. Yeah.
That is the new Jerusalem and earth combined.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is, that's the biggest part. I mean, that's what we don't experience right now is being in God's intimate communion, which it's kind of one of the definitions I found when I was reading about dwelling in the tabernacle is like that intimate communion with God.
Mm-hmm.
Being in that creates a place where tears are obliterated, mourning is obliterated, crying is obliterated, pain is like that's it's you can't have them both together. Which
yeah.
that whole thing like blows my mind. Like I can't wrap my mind around it. I don't get it. And that's part of the reasons like as a kid, like I couldn't I couldn't wrap my mind around Revelation because it was so scary, because it's so unknown. Like if like still to this day, if I tried to think about forever, it's like weirds me out. Like I'm like, I don't want that. That's weird. Because there's no end point. Everything in our life has an end point, and end points are kind of calming and reassuring and kind of like, you know, you say the phrase like, and this too shall pass, you know, because we've never
right.
experienced anything that we wanted to last forever.
Yeah.
Except for marriage, babe. But,
what?
But we've never, but I don't necessarily want to like do dishes for the rest of my life, you know, like not to say that's what marriage is, but it's just hard to imagine like a world where like you want everything to last forever. So it's hard to imagine forever because that sounds really scary, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but that's part where you can't imagine. And another thing that blows my mind and I can't wrap my mind around and it's kind of just scary is like wiping away every tear, crying will be no longer, mourning will be no longer. When we're like, we've been talking about James and trials and we've like programmed our minds to know like trials are good, like suffering is good, it produces endurance, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, no, that won't be anymore. Like it'll only be good things. And it's like, but I thought that was good. Like I thought we needed to do that. And so it just kind of, I'm like, what is this robot like Stepford Wives heaven going to be like? Or this tabernacle going to be like it doesn't sound good to me. But that's just because my mind is like, you know, limited in what I've experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, it's like, what do you do with this? It doesn't seem normal. It doesn't seem, just in a strange way, it doesn't seem amenable to us because we know only this. We only know this world. And so it is strange to think about. But I guess that's where kind of what you talked about. Like, this is something completely new. Like, it's something that
right.
you don't even know how that's going to work.
Right.
And so I think that's what you were saying comes in, is it doesn't work the same way.
And so my biggest question is, like, what's the point of reading about this? I mean, honestly.
That's a good question, which kind of brings me to, like I kind of, when I was reading over this passage, I kind of had this really profound revelation.
And I've been waiting to hear it all this week.
So, yeah. So I read it and I was like, I've been trying to think through Revelation and what, like, I've still sort of been forming what my views on it are. And so just a brief overview of what kind of the possibilities are. So there's, in the study of the end times, there's this idea that you're either premillennial, postmillennial, or amillennial. So the millennium being that Jesus, in Revelation 20, it talks about Jesus is going to reign for 1,000 years. So if you're premillennial, you believe that those 1,000 years are literal, and you believe that Jesus is going to return before those 1,000 years, and then Jesus is going to literally rule on the earth for 1,000 years, exactly 1,000 years. That's the premillennial view in a nutshell. Postmillennial view believes that Jesus is going to return after the millennium, and that millennium may or may not be exactly 1,000 years. It may be a symbolic number, but Jesus, regardless, is going to somehow rule on the earth, and then he's going to return after the millennium. The amillennial view views the 1,000 years as purely symbolic, and actually that the millennium is now. The church age is the millennium, and Jesus rules through the church. So that's just in a really quick nutshell, those are the three views. So coming out of seminary, like I think when I started, I was a premillennial believer. But coming out, I came to hold a much more amillennial view just because of the things that I read and studied. And so I have kind of struggled with that because I hadn't really known what that means. And as I was reading through Revelation for this, I kind of just had this moment where I realized, well, so wait a minute, if the amillennial view is that this is the millennium, that Jesus is ruling on the earth now, I had this profound realization that, wait a minute, the church is the body of Christ, right? Mm-hmm. So the church is Christ's hands and feet on the earth today. So in some real way, in my view that I've come to hold, in the amillennial view, like, we as believers, as Christians, are implementing the rule of Christ, the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big moment for me, because in bringing it back to this passage, like, if eventually there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth and all of these things, God is going to be among us and he's going to do all these things. Well, in some real way, like, we have to be the ones that are doing that now. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That to me just kind of struck me, and I was just like, and it made me more firm in the amillennial view that, wow, then that means that the reason why we study this is because this is now. Like, this is what the church is supposed to be now, and is supposed to be making happen now. If we are the hands and feet, if we are implementing the rule of Christ in the millennium right now, then that's incredible.
Okay. I'm tracking with you. But what about the descent? I mean, what was that? Was that Easter? Like, where was...
What do you mean? The descent of the New Jerusalem?
Right. Like, if we're here now, did we miss it? Like,
No. So this is... Like, so the amillennial view still holds that Jesus is going to come back and there's going to be a final judgment, and this is after that. That makes sense. So the amillennial view, we're in the millennium now, and then Jesus is going to return, and then all this happens. So in a way, like, the amillennial view is really similar to the postmillennial view. But the postmillennial view is just a little bit more, like, optimistic, okay. I guess.
So you're saying that Jesus is going to return and then all this happens, and you believe that Jesus is returning through us.
No. I believe that there will be, like, a literal physical return of Jesus, but, like, the millennium, as described in Revelation 20, is being implemented through the church now.
Right now.
Yeah. And then Jesus will return. That's a literal, like, physical return of Jesus. But the millennium is more of a spiritual rule rather than a physical rule, as maybe the premillennial or the postmillennial view would hold.
Okay. And you are not bound to the number of years.
No. No, not at all. I see the millennium, the 1,000 years, as a symbolic number, meaning a long time.
Okay, so the point of reading Revelation is, well, what we're gathering right now is that the practical point we can take away is that we have to be the hands and the feet of Christ reigning on earth.
Yeah.
Right now.
I think that's what Jesus has called us to. So to me, the point of reading Revelation or studying Revelation is that God is showing us, this is how I've chosen to sort of implement my reign on the earth. And this is how I've chosen to bring in the new heaven and the new earth. And so for me, that's really significant in the way I live my life as a human being. If I am the hands and feet of Jesus, and I am in some way charged with leading up to what is eventually going to be a new heaven and a new earth after Jesus returns, then that's really significant for me and changes the way I think about living my life.
Thanks for listening to Better Half Chats. Next week will be our last podcast of this season, and we'll be talking about Genesis 1. And then a few weeks later, we're going to do kind of a different podcast where we're just going to answer questions from our listeners about ourselves. So just personal questions about our life, our family. You can ask about our favorite food or embarrassing moment, all the standard questions, or come up with some really creative, fun ones. And we're going to take all those questions and do a podcast where we just answer them. So email us your questions at betterhalfchats@gmail.com. And also at Better Half Chats on Twitter, you can tweet those questions. And then we'll compile the questions and come back after our finale a few weeks later and answer all of them for you. We can't wait to hear from you.